Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster, and it's a new you and a new year, isn't it? Well, I hope you're saying yes to that. Today, we're going to be talking about joy, how to bring more joy in your life. And before you go, oh, no, this is too airy-fairy for me. No, it's not at all. It's very practical. We've got a very practical solutions for you to step into feeling more joy in your life. You know, the yogis, you've heard of yogis, right? You know, meditation's around everywhere, yoga's around everywhere. Well, you know, the yogis tell us that we're made of sat, C-H-I-T, chit, and ananda, sat, chit, ananda. Now, what the heck is that? Well, they say that we're ever existing, ever conscious, and ever new bliss, or in this case, joy. Right? So what do you think has to happen for you to step into joy in your life? Think about it. Do you wake up in joy, or do you wake up worrying about what's going to happen today? Or you rush off to get your first cup of coffee and your breakfast, and now you're driving to work and you're thinking about the challenges you're going to have at work. Is that how you start? I hope not. I hope my audience is going, well, we used to start that way, but now we're choosing to start with a sense of joy and gratitude in our life. So we're going to be talking about that today. I've got a very special guest from University of Michigan on the show today. So I got to take a quick break. Before I take the break, I do want to give a shout out to a couple of my network and BBS Network, E360 Network, Flix Network. UK Health Network is doing a great job for us in the UK. They're distributing all over Europe this show. So we really appreciate you. And for those of you that are new to the show, you can always tell Alexa, Cortana, or Siri to play Voices of Courage podcast. It'll come right up for you. And you can also subscribe to our show at voicesofcourage.us. And, of course, get all the past shows. You don't want to miss any of these shows. They're a million. They're amazing. All right, I'm going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. It's your host, Ken D. Foster, and Dr. Michelle, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
You and I were talking in the green room ahead of time, and I was telling you how much I was really looking forward to this interview once I read your bio, which is very extensive. So let me give my audience just a little preview of that bio. Michelle is an award-winning NIH-funded researcher at the University of Michigan. And for almost 30 years, Dr. Michelle Seeger has been designing and evaluating methods to help people cultivate the transformations and mindset necessary for creating changes that are sustainable. Her combination of academic research with real-world health coaching permits her to create practical and engaging behavioral change systems. And just to let you know, she's a frequent guest on New York Times, has been in New York Times, NPR, The Atlantic, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Prevention, Real Simple, and Time, just to name a few of the major media outlets she's part of. So Dr. Michelle, welcome so much. It's so good to have you.
Thank you. I'm just excited to get into a conversation. You have so many interesting guests and covers such a wide breadth of topics. So thank you.
Well, you have a new book out, and I'm going to probably jump right into that because it's very, when I saw it this morning, even the cover inspired me to feel more joy in my life. What brought about your thoughts about writing a book on joy That seems like it's taken you down a different path in your life.
Well, so this book takes a unique angle on joy in that it's about how do we help people change the way they think? How do we change the way we think about behaviors that we think of as weight loss behaviors, as healthy behaviors like exercise and intentional eating? How do we think about them in ways not only that we can better sustain within the hubbub of our busy lives, but that also bring us joy? And so that's kind of the overarching purpose of the book. But is it okay if I take a step back and tell you how I got into the studying sustainable behavior change? Because I think it's really going to resonate with you.
Let's do that. Yeah, please do. Yes.
So I was doing my first master's degree, and we were studying whether cancer survivors who exercised would decrease their depressive and anxiety symptoms. And these were people 4.5 years after recovering from cancer. So they were, you know, busy people. They weren't active patients. And so we found at the end of this 3-month study that the people who exercised did improve in these psychological areas compared to the control group. But part of our study was to call everyone back again about 10 weeks, 12 weeks after the study ended and talk to them about exercise. And people were smiling. And I thought as a youngster that we had really changed people's lives and not just done good research. But in fact, I was completely wrong. Because almost everyone had stopped exercising when the study had ended, despite knowing the benefits. And so when I asked people why they stopped exercising, they said they were busy working, raising children, helping their parents, doing this, that, and the other. And it was the realization that if people in our culture who faced a life-threatening illness do not feel comfortable or have the skill set to sustain their own self-care through behaviors like physical activity, then we have a real problem in society. And so that's kind of the overarching purpose and goal of all of the work I do, including this book.
Well, I really like that. And I'm glad you're doing that research because, you know, what I found in my own life is that, you know, exercise is really a lifestyle behavior. And if you want to stay healthy in your 70s, 80s, 90s or beyond and not have a lot of physical pain, one of the ways to do that, of course, is what we're talking about today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to, you know, find out some of the behaviors that, you know, we just talked about exercise, but what other behaviors contribute to joy in our lives?
Gosh, well, the behavior that I'm going to say first certainly is the biggest contributor to my joy, and that is sleep. Sleep is, we know that sleep is such an incredibly important thing that our bodies do. And that's why we need to get enough of it. It, you know, mentally, physically. It's interesting to note, though, that while for me, I mean, the sleep is important for everyone, regardless of whether it's the most important behavior. For me, it's the most important behavior, but people are different with their foundational self-care behaviors. My husband's foundational behavior is exercise. So part of this is knowing which of the behaviors do you need to do, and if you don't do them, you don't feel joy, you feel terrible. And so, of course, eating in healthy ways, eating in ways that resonate with your preferences, that fuel you instead of deplete you. I mean, you know, we could go on and on. Meditation can be a wonderful thing. But one of the challenges is that people feel like they have to do them all or they have to start them all. It's the New Year's, you know, I've got to pray or meditate every day. I've got to eat healthy. I've got to exercise. I've got to get enough sleep. That's an overwhelming task for people. So while many behaviors might contribute to joy, we have to be really tactical about how we approach this behavior change project so we make the choices that are going to best serve us in our lives.
But, you know, you talk about the meditation bubble that happens, you know, a lot of the motivation bubble. Sorry, I've got meditation on my mind. Motivational bubble. bubble. And, you know, that everybody's motivated, like, you know, we just touched on the new year to make changes, right? Wow, I'm going to get healthier. I'm going to eat better, you know, exercise, and I'm going to complete my goals. And why does it seem so problematic for everybody after about the third or fourth week in January? I think the percentage of people that are still on their goals drops dramatically.
Dramatically. And that's why it's called the motivation bubble, is that we initiate a change, New Year's resolution, swimsuit Susan, you know, that high school reunion coming up, whatever it is, we initiate a change in this. We're so filled with motivation and inspiration and commitment. The problem is that bubble is vulnerable. As soon as it, you know, think about the surface of a bubble. We're not talking about plaster. We're not talking about wood. We're talking about this very permeable thing and very burstable. So as soon as our plans that we made with such good intentions and enthusiasm bump up against some mundane thing in life, like you get a call from school and you have to pick up your child or grandchild because they're sick, or an unexpected work deadline bumps up against your plan, the bubble bursts. And all of a sudden, in a way, your plan was falsely held up and it can't survive through the ebbs and flows of our true daily lives. And so that's why it's a challenge. And that's why most people are not able to keep it up after a few weeks, because the plans they made were unrealistic.
Before you get to unrealistic, because I want to I got to take a quick break, but I want you to follow that train of thought. I also want to get into the what creates lasting and permanent change. So I'm going to take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. You know, we're calling this show today The Courage to Make Joy. And I'm talking with Dr. Michelle Sager of the University of Michigan. And she's got a new book out right now. And we're going to be taking a little deeper dive into that. But before we get in, well, so the concepts we're talking about are already in the book. But before I get to the book a little more, I'd like to finish that train of thought that you just had, Michelle.
Sure. So, when we initiate change in a motivation bubble, our plans burst when they bump up against any mundane thing in life. And so that's why it's so important that when we initiate any change, that we set ourselves up for success before we start. And you know, that gets into what you asked me to speak about, which is how do you create, you know, lasting change. And, you know, you would have to ask me an easy question like that, right?
Lasting change. Lasting change is the key here, right? We want lasting change and not the stop-start patterns. I start to exercise, I stop. I start eating right, I stop. How do we break those patterns? How do we get into this?
Yes.
What's the research say?
Well, that is the topic I've been studying for 30 years. So I do have a formula, and here's how we start. First, we have to appreciate whether the ways we've changed in the past has worked long-term or not. For most people, the answer is no. Now we want to go to, well, why have I typically started to make a change? And most often when it comes to eating and exercise, which is what the topic of the joy choice is, we initiate to lose weight because we got a scary message in our last doctor's appointment. And while those are logical reasons for changing and trying to exercise more, the research suggests that those might get us to start in a motivation bubble, but they don't keep us long term. So we have to change our whys from the wrong whys that do not drive lasting motivation, high quality, stable motivation, to whys or reasons for change that do. And those include, the best reasons are the ones that relate to how we feel when we do the behavior, when we move our bodies. Does it help us reduce our stress? Does it help us lift our mood? When we eat something that is good for us, Does it energize us? Does it make us feel proud of ourselves compared to doing something that we might have done in the past or feel tempted to do, but we know it actually makes us feel terrible and it influences the rest of our day in a negative way. So motivation pathway, stable, high quality motivation begins with a deeply compelling reason or why for change. Number one, I'll pause there to see if you have any questions before I go.
I'm just taking notes here because I went through this myself, right? So I had a diagnosis that kind of scared me. So I went, oh, I'm going to eat better now. And so just as you're describing, exactly, right? First 30 days, no problem, right? Now I'm in that, you know, well, it's past now, but now I'm in more of that kind of stuff. So I'll eat good now and then, right? You know, I'll get on, get off. And I think a lot of people do this, and that's what we're talking about. But I really like what you said about the deep rise, you know, how it lifts our mood, how we feel more positive, how we feel energized, how we feel more productive, how we, you know, probably are more productive. I know
we are more productive. And the interesting thing is we haven't been taught to think in this way about exercise and intentional eating. So it really is a paradigm shift, a mindset shift. And part of this is our whys direct the inner scripts we have with these behaviors. So we need to change the way we think in order to change our behavior. And, you know, the truth of the matter is I could talk about our whys and motivation for hours. And I know that you want to get to another really important part of the equation. And that has to do with how do we consistently fit it into our lives? How do we stay the path, if you will? And to answer that question, we have to understand that just about the biggest reason most people don't stick with change, especially if they have a really strong motivator, is because when their plans bump up against something unexpected, they fall prey to all or nothing thinking. We have perfectionistic ideas, our goals, right? When we set our goals, they're ambitious and we deeply hope to achieve them because they feel important to us. The challenge is that most of us, well, if life doesn't permit our plan from occurring and we are stuck in all or nothing thinking, there's only one option and it's nothing. And that gets us kicked right off the path of lasting change. So the solution is instead of doing nothing, instead of feeling that it's perfection or nothing at all, we make the perfect and perfect choice that lets us do something instead of nothing. It's not a fail. It's not dumbing it down. It's actually the solution for consistency and staying the path. And it's not just like pragmatic and common sense. It's actually what research on eating and exercise suggests will lead more people to sustain a change in behavior.
Dr. Michelle, let me ask you this, because you're giving us some really deep insights. Let's say I'm making the choice to stop all or thinking, okay? And I'm going to embrace more of a thoughts around, it's going to create lasting change and not being so hard on myself. It's either this way or that way, that type of thing. What are the beliefs people have to embrace to change this all or nothing thinking?
That is
wait, hold that thought. I got to take a break. But when I get back, we'll answer that one.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. And I'm with Dr. Michelle Sager. She's got a new book out. We'll put on the screen real quick. It's called The Joy Choice. That's what we're talking about right now. I want you to answer that question, Dr. Sager. How do we get rid of all or nothing thinking? Is there certain beliefs we can at least embrace.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's one of the most important takeaways that your audience can have, is that really to change our behavior, what we need to do is change our beliefs. So this is really about belief change, which of course isn't something that people commonly think about, right? When your clinician says you should be exercising more, they don't say to you, you need to change your beliefs about exercising so that you can exercise more. But in fact, that is the foundation of a sustainable change. So here's the belief. The way to not believe in all or nothing and to fall prey to perfectionistic thinking is, it's simple, actually. It's to believe that something is better than nothing, and to believe that everything counts on the path of lasting change. And it's not just, it doesn't just sound cliche to say this. It's, if you think about it this way, if you're on a journey anywhere, it doesn't really matter how big of a step you take, right? It's just taking any step toward the destination on the path. It's an ongoing journey, and that's why everything counts. And when we can embrace that idea, instead of feeling like failures when we can't do what we had hoped to do, planned to do, committed to do, but instead we compromise and we're flexible, then we can feel successful when we achieve that.
So let me ask you about that. Okay. So everything counts. So our failures count and our successes count. And how do we use that for positive change?
Well, I mean, the first thing I want to say is we don't want to consider something different than what we planned, something less than we had planned, or a compromise, if you will, as a failure. We want to consider it a small step, regardless of how small, on the path. So that's first and foremost. The second thing about failure is anything we do is data for learning. So even if we didn't do any exercise, or even if we totally didn't stick with the eating plan that we wanted to do, as long as we consider that an opportunity to reflect on and use going forward, nothing is a failure. So we've learned to think about exercise and eating in this binary success failure way, but that sets most of us up to fail, in fact, because it creates beliefs and attitudes and approaches that do not go with the flow of life. I want to pause here and just add, if you think about how we live every other area of our life, whether it's parenting, whether it's in relationship with our partners and spouses, friending, whatever we are, we don't expect perfection. When we can't meet a friend for that coffee date we had scheduled months before, we don't feel like failures. We chalk it up to, life happens. And so we make an alternative plan. Yet, we don't bring that same wisdom and grace to eating and exercise.
And sometimes we don't bring that wisdom and grace to ourselves. Well, we'll give it to somebody else. We'll let them off the hook, right? But we don't let ourselves off the hook.
Yes.
I think there's a challenge with that. One of the things that I do every day and teach my clients is to ask yourself at the end of the day, what worked, what didn't work, and where can you improve tomorrow?
Yes.
Knowing that life is a journey. We're constantly, I don't know about you, I constantly make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And it's okay. Because that's how I learn and grow and become who I've become. You know, you asked me how this show grew so fast in the last 6 years. Well, it's because I just ask those questions every day. And imagine if all of our audience asked those questions every day. Wow, maybe I can just improve upon it a little bit. I don't have
Absolutely.
To get hard on myself, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to put up your book a little bit here because, so now I'm going to get back to the book. And I want to ask you, what would you say in your wisdom when somebody is reading the book? What are their takeaways? Like what are the benefits for them to read the book, and what are they going to walk away with?
Sure. So, of course, as a behavior change researcher, I kind of care more than just that the book is really a fun read. I care that it's also going to help people think differently. And so one of the biggest global takeaways is that people will think differently about exercise and healthy eating. But more specifically, I identify four decision traps that in my decades of health coaching, I've come upon as being the core reasons that when we get to that point of choice, that exercise plan or that meal, but we happen to be at a party, there are four decision traps that tend to get in the way. They tend to be temptation, rebellion, accommodation, and perfection. And if there's time, I can tell you briefly about each one. Do you want me to do that, or just
we've got a little time with this. Let's do it. I was just about to write them down myself.
Okay. Go ahead. Well, those four temptation disruptors actually are the acronym TRAP, because part of the thing people need to do is be able to think on their feet and improvise, because our decisions around exercise and eating happen in the moment, whether we plan them or not. So temptation, that's when we feel this visceral pull to eat that beautiful chocolate cake glistening across the room, or to stay on the couch and watch Netflix instead of take that planned hour walk. Now, there's nothing wrong with temptations. The problem is that it feels like something from outside of us is pulling us. And that's actually not a very productive way or adaptive way to think about it, or the way it actually works in our brain. So once we learn that, in fact, it's our history with sitting on the couch watching Netflix, and it's our history eating that chocolate cake that actually is creating the pull, it gives us more cognitive control in that moment. So that's temptation. The second decision disruptor is rebellion. And I don't know if I need to say very much about this, because most people will resonate with this, right?
I think so. I think rebellion, we all can be rebellious at times, and some more than others, but yeah, definitely. But go ahead and let's talk about
when we initiate a change in our eating, or we have to exercise more and it feels like something we should do for whatever reason, our natural human psyche has reactants to that. And we are naturally motivated to go, screw you, eating plan. I'm not going to do that. And that is this normal reaction, but it gets in the way, because instead of actually having adaptive, productive ways of thinking about the choice at hand, we have all this energy to do the exact opposite of what we had hoped to do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. What's the next one?
The third one is accommodation. And this is when we always, let me say this loud, not sometimes, when we always put our own exercise and eating needs and plans below the needs of others in our work. So it's when we're a workaholic and we just, even though we make plans, they just go out the window every day because we can't get to zero in our inbox. And so it's important to tend to the needs of others. But if you always, always put other people's needs above what you had planned to do, then that's the accommodation disruptor. And the last one sets the stage and amplifies all the other one in its perfection. It's when you have to do it right, you have to do it perfectly, because that means you're going to feel even more rebellion. It's like, I can't have that piece of cake. I can't have any of the cake. So of course you eat five pieces instead of, if I didn't have a perfectionistic approach to that cake, I could say, you know what? That cake is not on my current eating plan, but I'm at a party and I want to participate in the celebration. So I want to have a quarter of a piece. There is no need to rebel in that circumstance. So that's why perfection really, the all or nothing thinking really amplifies and exacerbates all the other ones. And so those are the four decision disruptors. And there's actually a quiz on my website if people want to know which ones are the ones that tend to get in their way so they can develop more effective strategies.
Okay. Well, for my listening audience, the website is www.michellesager.com, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we did we get that right? MichelleSager.com. It should be .com in there. So I see it's going across the screen. So MichelleSager.com. And you can take the quiz on our website. By the way, Dr. Michelle, where can we get the book at?
Anywhere you can get the book. On my website, there's a link to a lot of online sellers, also in-person stores, but it's available around a lot of the world. So for your people in the UK, you can get it in the UK. You can get it in Australia. But if you're in the United States, you can, there are lots of sellers are listed.
Okay. On my great. Website. All right. Okay, you know, I got to take a quick break again, but okay, so we got temptation, rebellion, accommodation, and what was the last one?
Perfection, trap.
Perfection.
Decision trap.
Okay. Okay, so I want, as I come back from the break, I want to see if we can integrate that with changing habit. Mm-hmm. And I think we're doing that, but there's just deep-seated habits that have been like a record, you know, grooves in your mind, right? That you've got these habits and we want to change, but for whatever reason, these habits seem to keep coming up. So I'd love you to address that when we get back from our break. All righty. Well, you know, I usually don't promote myself on my own shows that much, but his team has said, hey, Ken, you should really be telling the people out there about some of your workshops coming up. And if you go to my website, kendfoster.com, I have ongoing events that we teach you how to really change your thinking, change your mind, step into your brilliance, let go of any past kind of challenges that you've had, no matter what you've done, what failure you've gone through. We've got programs that can really step you up and fire you up for the new year. So I hope you'll check it out, kendfoster.com. Now back to my amazing guest, Dr. Michelle Sager. Dr. Michelle, okay, habits get, habits get a lot of talk out there. Everything, you know, when Stephen Covey, I think years ago, created that book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, we all paid attention. Oh, we got some habits. How do people really change their habits?
Well, you know, we've talked about some of the things that people need to know about, but what we really want to do is we need to think about what is the beginning of a sustainable change? What is the foundation of a change that can stay standing throughout all the storms that, you know, that come on the change, that come at us, whatever stage of life we're in. And that is having a deeply compelling reason for wanting to make a change. It's when people make changes haphazardly because of cues like the new year or fears leaving their doctors. It's not that those are bad reasons, but those cannot drive sustainable motivation. And our ability to improvise when we come up against the challenges that our plans face. So not only do we need to have a really compelling reason, and you know, it may sound cliche to say, but the research suggests, and this makes sense because this is the way our brain works, that when we know something helps us feel better, and when we know something helps us contribute to the people and the areas of our life that we care most about, those are individual but can be intertwined motives. The most potent motivation is to feel your best and be of service. So when you think about wanting to make a change, really consider, am I changing for a reason that is deeply compelling, that's going to be deeply compelling in 4 weeks when I'm busy or not? Mm-hmm. So that's really the beginning. So we need to focus on that sufficiently.
I really like that a lot. And I think my experience has been that, sometimes it just takes courage to do this. I mean, once you have written out your why, you are really clear now, you know, not just the surface why, like Dr. Michelle was talking about, but the deep why of why this is going to work for you. you know, then it's you have to step into this thing we call courage. It's like, yes. I know this from my own behavioral patterns. If I get to the gym, you know, after the winter, sometimes in the winter, in the summertime, gym drops off and, you know, I'm outdoor activities. But when the winter hits and I want to get back to the gym, it's like this 3-day rule, okay? If I can go there 3 days in a row, okay, or three times, it changes something. But that's where the courage kicks in. What does our research say about that? What is going on with that? Why do we need to step out of our comfort zone to get there, I guess it is?
Well, you know, there's different thoughts about that. You know, the research on flow would suggest that to be in that state of flow, we need things to be somewhat challenging, not too challenging. You know, now if things are too challenging, then we don't feel confident. So, you know, when I think about courage, and I think that is such a beautiful concept and theme to tie in here, we want to think about it as what do I need courage to do? Well, people need courage to really decide that they're going to prioritize not their health and well-being, which is very vague, but how they feel every day. They need courage for prioritizing time to exercise when they have all these other things to do. They need courage to say no sometimes when people who they care about need something from them. So I think courage is a theme that really is woven throughout this whole new story of behavior change, but we just haven't been talking about it.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. I think, you know, we live in a world of duality, right? There's pain, there's pleasure, there's light, there's dark, there's up, there's down. I think sometimes people want to cut off half a duality. They want all the pleasure, but no pain, right? They want to feel good. They want to eat well, you know, have vital energy and everything, but they need to realize that, you know, there's another side to this duality. And when we're able to get out of our comfort zone, in my estimate, and that takes courage, as we're discussing here sometimes, then we can get different results. And that's really what we're talking about. Different results, right?
Yeah. We're talking about doing things differently, thinking differently. So the different result is that you're able to sustain the behavior in your life. You're able to feel joy when you decide to do something instead of nothing, instead of like a failure, because you're taking care of yourself and you're taking one more step on the path of lasting change.
You know, one of my favorite things you shared today was that you don't go to your clinician or you don't go to your gym coach and they say, and you ask them, well, what do I need to do? And they say, well, you need to change your beliefs. That just doesn't usually happen. I love when you said that. but, you know, that belief piece, because I want to come back to that. That's mm-hmm. such an important point. How does a person, first of all, in your estimate, know that they need to change their beliefs? What would be the symptoms?
Wow, that's such a good question. Well, you go right to the symptom. The symptom is when I can't do what I plan to do, when I can't do that exercise session or follow the plan, the eating plan to a T, do I go, it's not worth doing. If you do that, when you ask yourself that question, then that is a sign that it's time that you would benefit from changing your belief around that, instead of it being all or nothing or needing to hit a bullseye for success to happen. If you decide, it's a choice. Actually, I mean, there's all this cognition involved. You have to choose that you're going to change your belief to right. Something is better than nothing. Yeah. I mean, it feels so common sense, yet we've been socialized or even indoctrinated, if you will, to believe that we have to do it right to be successful. But in fact, most people can't do it right every time. And that is the recipe for not doing anything.
There's a lot, you know, some of the religions are set up that if you fail, you've sinned and, you know, and therefore you need to repent. Well, it's so interesting because what we're really talking about, listen, if you fail, you just need to look at your beliefs, your choices, and your actions of the past, and spend some time in introspection looking at this and make some new choices. It seems simple, but of course it's very difficult for some people to do.
Well, but your question that you said that you have your clients ask, it's really a very similar thing to what works and what doesn't. If someone says, you know, the all or nothing thinking, it doesn't work because it gets me to do nothing. Then you go, okay, that doesn't work. Next time I'm going to try this all or nothing thinking. I'm going to try making the perfect imperfect choice so that I can feel good and do something today. I mean, you think about parents who are juggling jobs and families. It's very hard to do it right every time. And yet, you know, we talked about giving ourselves grace, but that is part of the equation, that the recipe for success is giving ourselves grace when it comes to doing what we're able to do on any given day. Now, that doesn't mean you don't set goals, but when you can't achieve what you set, there's all these other options, but we haven't been taught to think in this flexible, creative, and joyful way.
I hear you. Well, listen, I want to thank you for being on the show. We're out of time today. The book is The Joy Choice, and it's available at pretty much anywhere books are sold, and you can get it there. Highly encourage you to pick up this book. You know, that last piece that you shared with me, Dr. Michelle, about choosing grace and choosing joy. I mean, if we were just to leave it right there, today's the day you choose joy and grace all day, how would your life be different? And if you need some support with that, I encourage you to go get that book. Again, thank you so much for being on my show. I love this interview.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to speak with you.
All righty. And for all of you, thank you so much for listening today. Hey, joy, grace. What would bring you joy and grace? I know for me, it's always service. It's always stepping up in service. And one of the ways you can be of service to this show is to let people know about it. Maybe just one person, right? You just text them or email them or send them our YouTube link or Twitter links or Facebook link and just say, hey, you know, check out this show. That's how we grow and that's how we change ourselves and we change this world. So I hope you'll participate with me. Until next time. Continue to look for and see the unseeable and know the unknowable and do the impossible. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's really been a pleasure.